welcome to Link to Hope, a podcast from Kentucky Cancer Link. I'm your host, Ben Keith. Until there's a cure for cancer, Kentuckians need hope today. Link to Hope is a monthly podcast featuring experts discussing ways to remove barriers for Kentuckians in need of screening, diagnosis, and treatment for cancer. In this episode, we're talking with Sarah Lister, founder of the Zinnia Project. Through her own cancer journey, Sarah started to figure out how to help humanize long hospital stays and help patients with some of the most basic needs. Her work resulted in a project that is touching the lives of Kentuckians living with leukemia. Make sure to stick around to the end when we hear an important update about the project from our friends at Kentucky Cancer Link. For now, let's hear from Sarah. Sarah, welcome to the show, and thanks for spending a little bit of time talking with us today.
Thank you for having me.
Of course. So let's start with the Zinnia Project. Can you tell us a little bit about the organization and the history and your journey in getting things started?
Well, that's a lot of questions, so I'm going to do my best here. I am a survivor of acute myeloid leukemia, and I had a bone marrow transplant in 2016. And it was a situation where I just wasn't feeling well at Christmas time, and I thought I had the flu or I thought I was run down. I have two little boys, and that can take all the energy out of you. So that was my impression when I went to see my doctor. And the only thing that seemed to concern him was that my blood labs were a little wonky, which is the medical term for when your blood labs look weird. So he sent me to a hematologist, and that morning I was told, you know, I think you're going to be fine. Why don't we set up an appointment in another month? And I came home feeling so relieved that there wasn't anything more serious than that. And at 10 o'clock that night, I received a phone call at home from my doctor, that's a harbinger of all bad things. And he asked me to put him on speaker so the rest of my family could hear what he had to say. And unfortunately, what he had to say was that I had acute myeloid leukemia and that I would need to check in the very next morning for the beginning of something called induction chemo, which lasts for, it's about 10 days worth of chemo, and then you have to stay an additional 20 days while they make sure that they have suppressed all of your red cells, white cells, all the cells, so much so that hopefully that gets that leukemia into remission. So I had a long stay. I also didn't know at all what to pack for a 30-day stay. I mean, it really freaked me out, I'll be honest, because my husband didn't even know the passwords to our bank accounts or the names of our children's teachers. So we were really blindsided by it all. And I Googled what to pack for a long hospitalization. And what I got was a whole lot of stuff for what to bring if you're having a baby. So those are very different things. It was like, you'll want to bring some lipstick and you'll want to bring a ribbon for your hair. So it was no help to me at all. And I stayed for 30 days. And in that time, I learned quite a bit about the things that I really did need for a long hospitalization. Unfortunately, I came home for 2 days, which I was so excited to see my kids again, because the hardest part about this treatment is that you cannot see children under the age of 18. My kids were 3 and 8 at the time. They were very little. So it was a huge heartbreak to me to be without them. So I got home after that month, and there were hugs all around, and things were really celebrated. And unfortunately, I got a call and was told I had to come back and repeat the entire cycle again. So another 30-day stay. But this time I did have a better handle on what I was going to need for that treatment and for the length of stay. So unfortunately, again, I'm just saying all these unfortunately's. It sounds like I'm Debbie Downer over here, but I did not get fully into remission, and so my doctors determined that I would need a bone marrow transplant, and several members of my family tested, especially my sister Kirsten, and we had no match. So that had to be cast out into a worldwide search for bone marrow for Sarah Lister. And I was very happy that after a couple of false starts, a couple of folks who matched but had certain allergies that wouldn't be healthy for me as a blood cancer patient. We finally found a great match, a 10 for 10 match is what they call it. And so then I returned to the hospital for another 6 months or 6 weeks. And it ended, actually it spread out to 10 weeks because I got pneumonia. So it's just, it was a lot is what I'm trying to say.
So your journey really started with one day you thought maybe you had the flu, you're run down a little bit, to the next day, you know, kind of out of the blue, check into a hospital, you're going to be there for 30 days, and then that gets extended. So you were essentially fairly unprepared to go into the environment for what is really a very serious, you know, round of treatments and a complete upheaval of your life.
The treatment they give you, the preparation they give you for a bone marrow transplant is considered a lethal dose of chemo. So if you do not have cells right there at the ready, you will not survive the pre-treatments for a bone marrow transplant. So yeah, it's quite serious. However, I did lean in pretty heavily on my sense of humor to cope with it. And I was so blessed. I had family and friends visiting me every day, all day, sometimes all night. And so when there were the scary times, and there were a couple of times that they weren't entirely sure I'd make it through the night, I was so blessed. I had somebody there with me to hold my hand. And what I walked away from the process thinking is that no one should have to go through it alone. And the other thing I've noticed over having spent some time with other cancer patients, there is no time for a second opinion. There is no time to process what your diagnosis is. You just have to take this ginormous leap of faith and believe that the care that you're receiving is the care that you need. And in my case, it was, and I'm incredibly grateful to have survived all of the 6 months or so of serious care. So the Zinnia Project was actually born in my hospital bed as I lay there thinking in the first month when I felt so unprepared for what was going to happen to me, I started a list on my phone on my notes app of all the things that I would want to bring if I had to come back. And so it was just jotting things down. And the number one thing was a different toothbrush, because the toothbrush, no, I'm not throwing any shade here to any of the medical facilities, but I am going to say I could go out in the yard and get a stick and probably get a better toothbrush than what is given to patients. And it's not really their job to make it, you know, a concierge experience. It's not their job to offer amenities like they would at the Ritz. But, I mean, a good toothbrush is such an important part of your care, and so is good toothpaste, and so is good deodorant. And suddenly I was making a list of not only the few things that they offered at the hospital, but then real care and comfort items, like being able to take a real shower and not using that sticky soap that they have in a soap dispenser in your shower. And I sound like I'm complaining, and I really don't want to come off that way, but I started really feeling like there's something I could do to help other patients like me not have an extended hospital stay with only, you know, a cup of ice water and a toothbrush. It's just, you know, patients deserve a little bit more, and I wanted to fill that care gap.
Well, one of the things that we talk about a lot on this podcast, and you know, frankly, you know, Melanie and Melissa have helped open my eyes to this a little bit as well, is there's the clinical journey through cancer treatment, but there's also the personal journey. And you know, our clinicians are doing a fantastic job of taking care of us from a medical standpoint, but we also have to have all of the other components of living as close to a normal life as possible. And that varies for, you know, different people, and everybody's journey is very different. But what I'm hearing you say is, you know, outside of just taking care of the clinical portion of that, you know, there's the, you know, you're stuck in a hospital for 30 days and you need to feel somewhat human as much as you can during that process.
100%. You want a chapstick, like my kingdom for a chapstick. You really want something like that. And you want a nail file, because the nurses in a hematology arena definitely do not do nails for the fear of cuts and nicks. But you do have to trim down your fingernails, toenails in a 6-month period. So I've included that. So what the Zinnia Project became, it started out a list in a hospital. And then after I completed my entire bone marrow transplant recovery process, which takes 100 days, you have to stay home for 100 days post-transplant, which is this is why I was so good at COVID, because I had already done it. So when in 2017, when I was back on my feet a little bit, I started out going to the dollar store and getting those little small pails with handles, and I decorated it with like little puffy stickers, and I put a what I call a shower poof, which is just one of those little plastic scrubbies that you can buy at the store. I shoved one of those down there, stuck a toothbrush in it, some toothpaste, a nail file. And that may have been it for the genesis of this program. And I took them over, and the nurses could not have been more kind about having received it. And they were so happy that they get to be the ones to take it into a patient room, because nurses walk into a room a lot, and most of the time it's not for good reasons. So they were really happy to come into a room and deliver some cheer. So the feedback just fed me. And over the past, what is now 6 years, that tiny little bucket has grown into the size of a laundry basket, which is now filled with over $100 worth of care and comfort items for the patient, up to and including a journal so that people can write some stuff down, a little coloring project. Those are kind of the whimsical things. There's a little sign on a stand that has an encouraging message that you can keep by the bedside to just kind of let people know that other people are cheering them on. But then there's real practical stuff too. And this is the nitty gritty that I found when I was there. And so a box of Kleenex. There is nothing like a real box of Kleenex when you're going through chemotherapy, because I've told people it's like everything out. You don't have to go home, but you can't stay here. It's like closing time at the bar. So that is what happens to your body with chemotherapy. It's like we've got to get all this bad stuff out. And you crave a good box of Kleenex in times like that. And again, the hospital does not provide a very decent box of Kleenex. If you've ever stayed even for one night, you know it's a box about 5 inches square with one ply Kleenex inside. Which is, you know, it's not going to do the job. So there are practical things in there. There are earplugs and sleep masks and a little hand mirror. And people always ask me, why do you put a hand mirror in these baskets? And it's because there are oftentimes patients develop sores in their mouth, or they may develop hives in response to some of the medication. Those things, a patient's laying in their back, they're hooked up to 1,000 different things on a big pole. And you want to be able to check these things out for yourself, so that when the doctor makes their rounds, you can say, or you can call your nurse and say, something's not right here, and I want you to check it out, because I looked at it and it looks funky. So that's what the hand mirror is for. And it just, you know, the list goes on, and I won't bother you with it, but it has grown into a very large basket. And then last year, I was hospitalized again for congestive heart failure, which is sometimes a offshoot of erythrocytic chemotherapy. I hope I pronounced that right. But so that's how we found out. I was in the hospital and that was discovered. But again, I'm back in the hospital. I'm experiencing the isolation and loneliness of being in a room. At that point, my family was way too overwhelmed to come visit me, so I rode that stay out alone. But it got my wheels turning again about what more I could do. And I came up with something called Mini Zinnies, which is a little pouch full of just some very basic things, toothbrush, toothpaste, earplugs, sleep mask, mirror, hand lotion, and probably one or two other things I'm forgetting. Oh, little tiny Purell wipes, so you can clean off your cell phone and things like that while you're in the hospital. And I put together those mini thinnies, and now every patient who checks in to the Markey Cancer Center 11th floor inpatient unit is receiving one of those mini thinnies. So I kind of expanded beyond blood cancer and into helping other hospitalized patients as well.
You know, in the world of small worlds, you were reconnected with Melanie, who I'm going to call on here to talk about your connection, because one of the things that I find really, you know, interesting and fascinating about the cancer community is how close-knit it is and it becomes, and how we all kind of learn from our journeys and help the next person on their, you know, help us on our next journey, but also help the next person that's coming along. So can you, but before I bring Melanie in, can you talk a little bit about, you know, your experience at Markey and how you got to know Melanie, you know, through your first journey?
Absolutely. I could cry thinking about how much gratitude I have towards Markey Cancer Center and what a first-class, first-rate experience I had. I had the opportunity to have my bone marrow transplant at other centers in the United States. I could have gone to Mayo. I could have gone to MD Anderson. You know, I had family and friends in all directions that would have been happy to host me. But I stayed here because this is where my people are, and this is where my friends are, and I could not have had a better experience up to and including Melanie, who was with the American Cancer Society at the time. And I walked into her office probably not even 6 months after I'd had my transplant, and I just thought my hair would never grow back because it just, I mean, not even like a little sprout, like a chia pet. You know, I was just waiting for some little thing to pop up. And so I went to see her because they had a wig program. And she and I mean, it's like, it was kind of like the first time I'd had a real girls' day out kind of thing. Because, you know, I hadn't had a lot of chance to go shopping or just really have girl time. So she turned it into this really fun thing. She and the other social workers there. And we found, you know, a fabulous wig that I could wear should I choose to. You know, I mean, some days you just go all natural, and some days you want to have a little hair to go out and have lunch. So she was great.
So Melanie, I'm going to let you relive some of the memories as well and your interaction, because, you know, I think this really talks about, you know, how important this community is. You know, we always talk about Link to Hope and how we want to continue to provide hope, and little things like providing a wig and helping people make their journey as comfortable as possible are really important components of that.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I worked as Sarah mentioned, I worked as a lay patient navigator for the American Cancer Society, and I was housed at Markey, and I was affectionately known as the wig lady. So anytime someone was experiencing hair loss, they're like, oh, you need to meet Melanie. So, you know, I always did want to make it a fun experience. And I think sometimes, I don't know, Sarah, was it you or we named, I know there was someone, sometimes we would name the witch, you know, like, well, here's Betty. She's real cute. I think she'll be real nice on you. But then, you know, also it's about connecting to other resources, like scarves and other head coverings. I think I may have even given you like a handy little notebook with information about your specific cancer. You know, I think sometimes people want to know and sometimes people just don't. And, you know, that's something that you have to respect. And I always did. So, but yeah, I think just, it was just great. I loved meeting Sarah, and she was special. You know, sometimes you do have those patients that just really touch you in a unique way. And Sarah was definitely one of those patients. You just have a light to you. And I remember, too, you were honored 1 year at this Expressions of Courage at the Survivor Celebration. So that was really special, too. But, yeah, I love it. It's great.
You know, it made that Expressions of Courage event, what really made that so special was because it was the first time I ever met my bone marrow donor. We worked it out in secret so that when I stood on that stage with local TV anchor Sam Dick, he started speaking about the bone marrow transplant program, and then he said, and Sarah's going to meet her donor today. The audience was just like, what? And I still have chills all over just thinking about that day. What a great, great event that is that Marquee puts on every year to just, you know, celebrate all the victories, big and small. And it's just, meeting my donor was just awesome. And we're friends now. In fact, on July 10th, I have it marked on my calendar, I'm going to send him a box of donuts, which sounds like a small gesture for somebody who saved their life. But he was walking through his college campus in 2016, and there were some college girls looking adorable and giving people a free donut if they signed up for the Be the Match donor registry. So why not? Free donut. College students are hungry. So he did it. He swabbed his cheek and went on his way. And I think he was probably a little surprised that he got called to be a donor, but he went through the whole experience with a smile on his face. And so it was extraordinary to get to meet him, and not very many bone marrow transplant patients do. So I was really honored by that.
And I think that really goes back to the personalization of the journey. And you know, again, there's absolutely 100% a clinical importance to cancer treatment. But if we don't take the time to kind of pause and recognize that this is a journey, and, you know, whether it's getting to know your donor or making sure you have, you know, proper Kleenexes next to your bed, doing everything that you can to make, you know, make your experience as humanly acceptable as possible. Or, you know, at the end of the day, we all have emotions, we all have feelings, and we all need to figure out how we can get through this in a way that allows us to heal and to be as whole as possible.
And the patients need to, they have a lot to focus on just to kind of mentally and physically prepare themselves for the care that they're receiving. And they shouldn't have to worry about whether or not they can call somebody to bring them a chapstick. You know, it just boils down to something as simple as that. And when your lips are cracked, it's kind of all you think about. So that's what we're trying to do here with the Zinnia Project, is sort of meet some of the basic needs and then go a little bit above and beyond to deliver some cheer. But ultimately, you know, we're providing no clinical services. There are no, there's nothing medical inside those baskets or those minis, because the hospital takes care of that. And I do want to mention that after I put together the prototype for the current Zinnia basket, which again is pretty large, I brought it over to the nurse manager at UK Marquee, Lynn Gentry, and she blessed it all on behalf of the hospital. So I wanted to make sure there was nothing I was doing, because that's the only downside of accepting donations. We built an Amazon wish list for the Zinnia Project. It's very specific. It's brand specific, because you want no fragrance, you want no parabens, you want nothing that could cause itching, sneezing. You don't want to give a patient something that's going to make them feel worse. So she was able to go through every item in there. And so the Amazon wish list is really the way to go if somebody would like to help the Zinnia Project. And the easiest way to do that is to just email me, Sarah, at zinniaprojectsarah@gmail.com. That's, you know, then I can send the link to the Amazon wish list and it'll be the most current. I do adjust it over time, because sometimes I get a little overwhelmed with laundry baskets, which are very large. And as we mentioned earlier, I'm currently operating the Zinnia Project out of a little space in my house in a home office. And the home office has disappeared. It has been completely engulfed with boxes of Kleenex and laundry baskets and towers of the things that I put inside each basket. So that's why I've got the good news of partnering with Kentucky Cancer Link. And I think other people could speak to that maybe.
Yeah, Melissa, you know, this is such an exciting story because, you know, I think the work that Sarah's doing with the Zinnia Project lines up so closely with the work that you all are doing at CancerLink. So I'd love to, you know, hear your take and where this relationship is going in the future.
Well, you know, Sarah and I have kind of orbited each other in the social media space. Honestly, it's funny. I've seen her kids, you know, the last 2 years but not really know who she is, but that's how social media is, right? We add someone as a friend because we have mutual friends, but, we were able to have lunch just a week and a half ago, probably. And just, I feel like just our kindred spirits in our passion for wanting to help other people and using our own stories to do so. And I think, you know, one of the things that Kentucky Cancer Link has really been blessed with, our leap of faith is when we expanded, you know, our footprint as far as the building that we're a part of. We went from just being half, and then a year ago, March, we expanded to the other side. And so that lends space. And so we have designated it for interns or, you know, things like that. It's just been good to have some elbow room to be able to, you know, get our work done. But when Sarah was talking about how, you know, her home office is just exploding with these items, it was a no-brainer to offer, you know, some space for her to be able to have a dedicated area for the Items in Zinnia Project, to be able to utilize our interns or to have a place where volunteers, we could put the word out that we need help building these baskets and have volunteers come in and help in a place that's not her her personal space. And because she really has been doing this on her own for a while, and just wanting to allow that to breathe and allow it to grow, get more people involved in Zinnia Project. But then also I think that it's a good way, you know, everybody loves a good collaboration story. Donors love good collaborations. And I think that, you know, it will just help both, you know, both organizations for us to kind of be the home of the Zinnia Project. And, you know, we are just down the road from Markey Cancer Center, so it'll be an easy spot to build these, you know, baskets, and for, you know, her to be able to continue her mission and us to help as well. And, you know, she didn't mention this, but, you know, before her diagnosis, she was the executive director of the Ronald McDonald House. So she's always had the heart for caring for other people. This did not just stem from her own personal you know, journey with AML, but again, it just clicked, and it just felt like it was a no brainer. So I think that I'm just really excited about it.
So am I. And we had the kind of lunch that you don't get to have very often, where the conversation never stops, and you're just thinking, I could sit here all day and talk to this person.
So we sat down and literally just started talking, you know, the both of us. And we connect also, you know, in a, you know, a parenting, you know, ordeal. We're moms of boys. And so we had a lot to talk about there. I don't even think we got to the Zinnia Project until we were maybe even done eating. So, and then that came to fruition. But just so impressed, you know, with her, and I just think that it'll be beneficial for growth for both organizations.
Well, and I think you're really hitting on, you know, the human aspect of this, and the fact that there's two organizations that have both been built around caring for people that need to be cared for while they're on their cancer journey, and then having that human connection of two, three kindred spirits. They can come together and really, you know, try to make a difference by listening to people, understanding, you know, where they are on their journey and how you all can best help them feel human and feel inspired to continue on their journey.
Yeah, I think the increased awareness of the Zinnia Project and having a space where if I wanted to have a donor or a media interview, you know, having a place to do that, again, that's not in my home, is truly, truly wonderful. But I also think that, you know, the work that Kentucky Cancer Link is doing is so legitimate. And I want to be a part of the legitimacy of an organization like that. The Zinnia Project is not a 501c3 organization. It is literally a personal ministry that I put together 6 years ago and blast out on my social media. And that's how I raised the money to be able to go to the dollar store and just go nuts on stuff that we need for the baskets. So on top of the Zinnia wish list and on Amazon, you know, sometimes people just want to send me $20, and that is totally great. And I will spend that. I will turn it into, you know, the dollar store is not a dollar anymore, so I can't do the math. It's now $1.25. But, you know, I'll turn that into a significant number of items for the Zinnia Project. I'm a really good shopper. I was before I got sick, and I'm even better now.
Okay, so remind folks once again, if they want to learn more about the Zinnia Project, how do they get in touch with you? And we'll link this to the podcast as well.
For me, it's all email is really the best way. That's the best portal to start with. And that is zinniaprojectsarah@gmail.com.
Terrific. Well, we will share that information out. Thank you, Sarah, for taking time to talk with us today. And more importantly, thank you for humanizing the journey that many people are going on and trying to make their day just a little bit better.
Thank you so much. This has been so much fun. I appreciate it.
All right. We'll share your information out. Thank you all so much.